mistakes, overthink the pace, I'm very true. Can't underestimate SB and Sean, breaking through the noise, serving real talk, the genuine choice. No pretense, no hidden schemes, just sports, passion, fueling dreams. From the field to the court, every play that's made, real takes over fake debates. Turn it up, hear the honest sound, unfiltered sports all year round. Discussion's pure, no masquerade, real takes over fake debates. Turn it up.
Hey, we are live. SB Talk Sports, Sean Webb, Real Takes Over Fake Debates. It is Monday, and you already know we are live every Monday and Friday at 7 p.m. Central Time. But unless it is a game during that time, and obviously we are a couple hours ahead, we do have a doubleheader tonight. We got the Titans versus the Dolphins and the Lions versus the Seahawks, which we will give you guys a preview of that shortly coming up in the show. Sean, how are you doing today, brother?
Happy Monday, SB. Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And also, I'm feeling better because the show started. I took me a sip of some Swift Energy. Go to SwiftEnergy.gg. Use code RTOFD to get 20% off your order. And no matter what platform you guys are watching on, make sure you guys like, make sure you guys share, and make sure you guys subscribe. And you guys are listening to the on the audio platform. Keep leaving the ratings. We keep going up. And make sure you guys like on there. Make sure you share that. And go ahead and plug your headphones on. And if you're doing your shift or you're just listening, whatever, just put your headphones on, sit back, and relax and listen to some good sports talk. Sean, obviously, the Monday is feeling really great. Shout out to people in the chat. Shout out to Tiff. Shout out to Gideon. Shout out to the people in the TikTok chat. I see a lot of y'all guys in there, too. Obviously, we start the show off with a little bit of excitement. You know, it's good, Monday football. But I have some sad news to start the show off with. Basketball Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo passed away at the age of 58. Reports show that it was due to brain cancer. Prayers to the Mutombo family and all. But Sean, what is your reaction to this? And obviously after your reaction, I would love to know what was one of your favorite Dikembe Mutombo moments as a fan watching the game.
Yes, B, certainly, you know, first of all, you know, rest in peace to Dikembe Mutombo, and prayers to his family and friends. When they announced a couple of years ago that he had brain cancer, he was undergoing treatment for brain cancer. You know, certainly you always, you know, pray and hope for the best. And definitely that was very much the case with Dikembe Mutombo. You know, I think when you see the outpouring of just love and adulation and remembrances for him today, it goes much deeper than basketball. And I know a lot of times, you know, particularly in, you know, this podcasting world or this, you know, media world that we're in, people want to focus solely on what type of player the person was and how good they were and their highlights and things like that. But Dikembe Mutombo, while a Hall of Fame basketball player, was a much greater humanitarian. His humanitarian efforts in Africa, in the Congo, in particular, you know, you can't undersell on any level. Definitely, you know, I think a lot of people know about him building a hospital, and people may not know the story about why he was one of the reasons why he was motivated to do so. His mother died because she was refused admittance to a hospital because she didn't have the money and the insurance to pay for it.
Wow.
And so he spent, you know, about $29 million, if I'm not mistaken, to build a hospital that, again, regardless of your insurance status and your ability to pay, he spent that money to do that. You know, he was, and I don't say this lightly, he was the anti-Brett Favre. He gave back. He didn't take. He gave back.
We're going to bring that name up later today in the show, too.
So, you know, so, you know, you just think about that. But also, you know, he was the NBA's first global ambassador. He was really big, obviously, in expanding the game in on the continent of Africa. And you see, you know, many guys speaking today. Masai Ujiri, you know, for example, spoke today. He was, you know, really overcome with emotion because he was very close to Mutombo. Joel Embiid obviously talked about his influence on him today. So, you know, you it's so much bigger than, you know, people say larger than life. That's a very, you know, cliche term, but Mutombo really was. And, you know, I know you're going to ask, you know, about some of the memories, you know, of Mutombo, but I think, you know, it was interesting for all he did as a humanitarian and on the basketball court. He was also someone who I think really bought in and really played along with the Mutombo character and brand, so to speak.
No.
You know, the finger wag, obviously, and definitely, you know, just, you know, people would give him a hard time about, you know, his speaking voice and the way he spoke and, you know, and things. But he, you know, often he was willing to be a part of the joke and didn't take himself so seriously that he didn't do that. So, you know, again, just, you know, 58 years is not a long time.
No.
But, you know, you can definitely say, you know, he lived life to the fullest. And certainly, you know, his impact is going to still be continued to be felt, you know, long after his physical being has left us. So, you know, that's it for me. Those are my general thoughts on Mutombo, SP.
Honestly, great thoughts, great takes. And then just put the fun of it, because out of Mutombo, it was kind of hard not to make fun of Mutombo voice, because around that time, Cookie Monster was a thing. At that point in time, so it's just like we the biggest thing around that time in the 90s is Sesame Street, and then you one of the best defenders in the league, and you're popularized, and you and Cookie Monster got the same voices. It's kind of hard not to poke fun at that around that point in time. But one thing about basketball players, though, especially when, like, you, of course, you're gonna get noticed for a lot of work that you do on the court, but when you're off the court is bigger, or if not at the same peak as your basketball career, you know you did something great. And I want to definitely give a shout out to, especially to all the players, I'm even going to say from the motherland or from Africa, whatever, because I've seen a lot of guys like that, like Mutombo. You got Luol Deng too, and I all see them guys all go back home, help build things, and either they could have a history where, like you said with Mutombo, which I didn't even know that story about Mutombo, about his mom passing, where they making sure, like, hey, this happened to me in my life, and I know how the process is going on at home. I'll make sure no other kid go through what the pain I had to go through. And, like, things like that, that warms my heart, and you have to salute a guy like that. And then it's just like, forget the basketball stuff. That's bigger than basketball. That's bigger than life. When you genuinely can help change other people's life or make somebody's life better, bro, that's greatness. Shout out to Mutombo. You more than the basketball Hall of Famer. You a Hall of Famer in life, things like that.
And one thing I will say, SB, you know, the NBA gives out a citizenship award, the J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award. And I know it's named after J. Walter Kennedy, but I would actually think it would not be a bad idea to rename the award after Dikembe Mutombo. And nothing against J. Walter Kennedy. I know his, you know, place in the history of the league, things like that. But I think it would be be in the best interest of just, again, continuing to maintain his legacy in terms of just not as a humanitarian, but also citizenship, and renaming that award after Dikembe Mutombo. So I hope the league is, you know, will consider that at some point, because I think it's worth it, especially because they've named a lot of their renamed and rebranded a lot of their awards after former players. But, you know, Mutombo, I think, you know, certainly deserves that honor.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be mad at the Mutombo getting that honor too, because, like, it did. Also, I don't want people, like, because, like, the point you brought up, I'm like, glad you take it. Some people be like, what about the other guy who already named out the awards? We always move forward in life. It's never. I want people to look at things like that as, like, it's not like we're forgetting about the next person, but every time in life, it will be great to pass the torch on to the next person, then the next person. That's just keeping the legacy going. And also, sometimes it's good to keep the legacy going, because people of the further generation might not be too familiar with the guy or don't have a heartfelt attachment. Like, even like right now, what the in finals MVP is what the Bill Russell Award, maybe 30, 40 years from now, it could be the Michael Jordan or whatever. It could change as long as it's like you continue to pass the torch. East Conference, this ain't nothing wrong with passing the torch on to the next person who does, who fits the mold of what that criteria of that achievement or trophy is. And I think the Mutombo embodies that award personally. But one thing, just as a basketball player, because that's what we know from, before we go to the next story, what is your favorite Dikembe Mutombo moment?
You know, honestly, I think back to 1994. Denver Nuggets were the eighth seed, and they were the first eighth seed to beat a one seed in a playoff series. They beat the Seattle Supersonics. And Mutombo had a crazy game in that closeout game. He had 15 rebounds, 8 blocks. You know, he, I mean, was literally willing, you know, along with, you know, Chris Jackson and, Brian Stith and Reggie Williams. And I'm just naming some of those guys on that team because they, you know, pretty good team in Denver at the time. But obviously Mutombo and Chris Jackson, who became Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, were, you know, the catalyst of that team. And just his heart and his will, you know, on the floor. And again, people talk about defensively. And then, you know, probably the other thing right off, well, there's two things, I'm sorry, SB. 2001, he gets traded mid-season from Atlanta to Philly. And people talk about that Philly, you know, 76ers team, you know, with Allen Iverson as the MVP that year. But they had the coach of the year in Larry Brown. They had Aaron McGee, who was the sixth man of the year. And getting Dikembe Mutombo took their defense to another level. And obviously we know, you know, they lost in the finals, you know, but just his impact on winning. And again, not being afraid to take on any challenge, any matchup was great. And then the last thing, SB, was a couple of years ago, the NBA did the NBA Africa game. You may remember during the summer. And of course, you know, Dikembe Mutombo being the global, you know, commissioner and global ambassador for the NBA was there, and Hakeem Olajuwon was there. And not only were they there, they actually played, you know, a couple minutes in the game.
They definitely played. They definitely played. So, it was moving slow, but they was out there, though. They were
out there. And, you know, and so it was, you know, just, again, just the joy of being a part of, you know, again, opening the NBA to, you know, expanding its footprint in Africa. And again, he was as big a part of that as anybody. So those are my things, SB, if I were thinking of just a couple of Mutombo memories.
My Mutombo memory, because obviously I was very much a baby, so I didn't get to actually like see and enjoy like every Mutombo moment, was with him and Jordan. I think it was in The Last Dance too. Or what, The Last Dance was one of these like Jordan documentaries where they was like him and Jordan had a debate during like the All-Star game, and he was just like, "You never dunked on me, Jordan. So Jordan made it his mission to dunk on Mutombo, and he actually got him off. But Mr. No is definitely a legendary one of the best defenders in the league. Paved the way for a lot of guys to be defense first, get to the block shots, and make sure that you are valued. But let us know what you guys' favorite Dikembe Mutombo moment is of all time, and also prayers to the Mutombo family during this time. Respect their privacy, show them love, show them care, everything with that. Since we're on the subject of NBA, though, Sean, let's keep it in the NBA realm. Obviously, a couple days ago, we had a big trade already. You know, every time the NBA season come around, it's always big trade season. So we got one already before the season even start. Carl Anthony Towns was traded to the Timberwolves for Randall and DiVincenzo in a first-round pick. I believe another team was supposed to be added to it yet. We didn't really stick at the full details, but let's just work with what we have here. We had time to, like, the shock value went down on this trade. It is two sides of that I've been really hearing lately. Obviously, with the Knicks, it's a win-now team move. But the problem is now that I'm hearing that Mitchell Robinson is for sale, because they acquired a cat. And also, it's a possibility that Mikal Bridges' extension won't be able to get extended because of this cat trade. Then we got the Minnesota Timberwolves side, where they said that this move was to make Anthony Edwards better as a player and establish him as the guy, which I already think he was the guy regardless, Cat being there. But then also to fix the money situation because they weren't going to be able to keep Cat, Gobert, and Ant-Man. So from everything you see from any angle, even if angle if I didn't bring up, how is this trade marinating to you and how you looking at it from both sides?
So, SB, just to update, because I know we did the video on Saturday.
Yes, go check that out too, by the way, guys.
So, Kiata Bates-Diop is going to be headed to Minnesota as a part of the deal. And Daquan Jeffries and draft compensation will be going to Charlotte. So, that should pretty much finalize the deal. But, of course, you know, you got physicals and all that things, you know, that they have to work out. But pretty much the deal is pretty much, you know, done. You know, again, you mentioned Mitchell Robinson. Obviously, Mitchell Robinson's out with an injury. I think there will be teams that certainly will be interested in Mitchell Robinson, whether they will trade for him while he's, you know, rehabbing and recovering, or will they wait until, you know, he's healthy before they, you know, make a move on him will be interesting. Again, the Knicks are in a different financial situation now because they've added, you know, a massive amount of money in Cat's remaining deal, about 4 years, $220 million left on that deal. So, you know, I think they understood that until they're able to, you know, officially do something with Mitchell Robinson, and depending on what they bring back, I think that will ultimately determine when they can do an extension from Mikal Bridges. But as far as who won the trade, I would say initially the Knicks obviously won the trade because, again, you know, in their view, this puts them in that conversation with Boston. And I'm saying in their view. I'm not saying in my view. I'm saying in their view. It puts them in the conversation with Boston. And certainly you understand in the Eastern Conference, SB, you know full well that, you know, with Embiid, with Bam, with Porzingis, you need a really good big. And the Knicks have that, particularly, you know, what he can do on the offensive end, you know, and his ability to space the floor and not take away from what Jalen Brunson does, you know, really well. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they integrate him defensively. Obviously, he's played for Tibbs before. And, yes, you know, and so he understands Tibbs. He understands how Tibbs gets down. You know, I know their relationship wasn't the greatest in Minnesota, but I would say, you know, Cat probably being more mature and understanding the situation he's going into, you know, you may see the best of Cat in terms of his two-way ability. And I don't think, again, he's never going to be Mutombo. He's never going to be Dwight Howard or Olajuwon defensively. But, again, the ability to make consistent effort defensively, I think, is a thing that you will be looking for out of Cat in New York. And also, again, you know, when they need a bucket, and, again, it's not always depending on Jalen Brunson to make a play, it's nice to have somebody you can just dump the ball into and say, go get us a bucket. And they have that in Cat.
Now, for me, like with the Knicks side, we're talking about it. Obviously, I do agree that I think the Knicks want to trade. At the end of the day, whoever gets the best player always win a trade initially coming straight off. Because at the end of the day, Cat is a better player than Randle and DiVincenzo. I think, like you said, you do need a skill bid to compete in the Eastern Conference because you got guys like Embiid that you got to see. And then you also got teams like the Celtics with different skill bids and Porzingis. And I know Al Horford is old, but Al Horford is still very skilled, and that's why he's still able to last this long in a career. I already had the Knicks as the second-best team in the East before this trade. Now, would I put them above Boston yet? No, but I still got them as the second-best team in the East right now. I think this help brings more versatility to – the Knicks offensively, so you won't just have to just be stuck with Jalen Brunson just still trying to do whatever he got to do with just controlling his own shot. But then also now you do that pick and pop game, and Cat don't necessarily need to be a ball stopper like how Julius Randle was, and that does make the difference for the Knicks. Now they'd be more versatile. So what else I'm thinking now with the Knicks situation is what I'm still gonna stand on for it with you, Sean, and I'm telling you that they need to go get Dwight Howard. I'm not letting this go. I think Dwight Howard, especially now with Cat, makes this a perfect fit for this situation now. Dwight Howard, they need a cheap big who can block shots because they don't have no money. A cheap big who can rebound, block shots, and let Cat go to the floor, I think will be perfect. So I think I have to go with that, Sean. How you looking on Minnesota side?
From Minnesota's perspective, again, this was a money move more than anything. Their roster's going to get very, very expensive. Was going to get very, very expensive after this season. And again, I think you mentioned, you know, them talking about opening things up for Anthony Edwards a little bit more and really kind of saying, hey, you have the keys to the franchise. I think we already knew that anyway, just based on kind of just the way they had started to play, and particularly, you know, last year, or it was last year or the last couple of years, you know, where Cat missed, you know, significant time with an injury, and you saw kind of the emergence of Ant as that true kind of alpha. Again, the big thing for me with Minnesota with this move is spacing. I just think, you know, Gobert and Randall, you know, and again, Jaden McDaniels, he's really streaky as an outside shooter. You know, so I just think, you know, that's going to be a big concern. Again, my belief is that I think Chris Greer is the general manager of the Miami Dolphins. Yeah. Chris Finch, their head coach, will probably really want to stagger the lineups and the minutes, particularly to have Randall run a lot with the second unit so he can kind of eat and cook as kind of the primary option with that second unit. But that said, you know, they are going to have to, you know, figure some things out. I also think, again, just long-term and just looking at some of the moves that Minnesota has made, again, they're going to have to make probably another move, not this season, but definitely the offseason. And, again, just because of the money and how very difficult it is to build a roster when you are, you know, in that second – when you're definitely in the second apron, but when you're a first apron team approaching that second apron. So, you know, I don't think they're done, but I think – you know, again, that'll be probably a year from now.
How much of this moving Cat, because it's another thing I kind of heard, and I kind of thought about this too. But when I thought about them moving Cat in general, I didn't necessarily think New York, but then when you go get Randall, it's like you can't trade Randall to come off the bench, because now I'm thinking like, how much of this moving Cat was the emergence of Naz Reid? Because Naz Reid now had the ability to stretch the floor. Naz Reid had the ability to sometimes create his own shot. Naz Reid, I'm not going to lie, he might not be a better shooter than Cat, but he's definitely a better defender than Cat. And in a perfect world, I really think like maybe the Timberwolves want to keep Randall, but maybe they want to start Naz Reid at the center though. But obviously with Julius Randle having a player option, they might use it for assets. But how much do you think Naz Reid has to do with this move being a part of it though?
I agree with you 100%. I think Naz Reid has a lot to do with this move. And again, we saw his emergence last year. You know, they really had three centers. Obviously, they played Cat at the four. They would kind of use a two big lineup, you know, quite a bit because of, you know, Cat's ability to stretch the four, but also Naz Reid, you know, is expanded his game as well. So I do think this is a lot of them saying, yeah, we got something with Naz. And, you know, there's 29 other teams that would love a Naz Reid on their team, right?
Yes, sir.
Because of what he brings. He plays like a guy who's not been paid, even though he's gotten paid. He's out there just giving it everything he has. And so I think Naz Reid definitely is a big part of why they make this move. Now, again, you mentioned Randall. Randall has a player option after this season. I would be shocked if he didn't opt out, just because, you know, by salary and when you look at where salaries have gone, he is severely underpaid. And now he gets an opportunity to, you know, test the market potentially, or again, potentially re-sign in Minnesota. But I think it has to come with the understanding of who's the top dog in Minnesota right now and whose team. Who's the guy? It's Anthony Edwards. So if you're saying, "Hey, I'm okay with that. I don't necessarily need to be the franchise player. You know, I want to win," then I think it can work. But again, it will be interesting to see, you know, how this plays out long term.
For me, yeah, it's like you say, you gotta wait and see how it plays out long term. But I think this is a W trade for the Knicks for sure. We're gonna wait and see how the Minnesota Timberwolves work out in the long term, because the only problem with Randall, and I think with Ant, like I said, I think that's hurting Ant, is spacing. And you telling me that, hey, this move is only for Ant to be emerging star. I think Cat already accepted that it was Ant's team. I never seen Cat had a problem with it at all. I just think they couldn't move Gobert, but I think maybe they probably would rather kept Cat and Nas, but you know, I was going to take Gobert like that. And then you looking at the situation of, because Minnesota built their team to beat Denver, which they did. They had the good three big rotation. Now I'm like, it was the Mavericks lost that bad where they just figured like, hey, this is not going to work, because now I feel like the team where Minnesota was at, but Randall could come in and show out. I don't know yet. But I feel like Minnesota took a step back, but I understand why they did it. But I feel like you knocking right on the window. I think one more year of trying to contend wouldn't have hurt it. But
well, let me ask something, SB. Mm-hmm. And I just want your thoughts on this from Minnesota's perspective. Do you think Minnesota realized that they probably got peak Cat, and that it's probably not going to get much better with Cat? So it's better now to move him before he becomes a difficult asset to move because of his contract, and because mm-hmm. maybe they say, or maybe his game isn't something that will continue to grow and get better. Do you think they kind of thought about that?
I mean, like I said, once we see the emergence of Nas Reed and they looking at him like that, so he's like, oh, we got, you know what I'm saying? That guy could do the same thing that Cat doing. And that could be a possibility of what you're saying, but I just feel like with Cat's skill set, no matter how much he fall off, unless he just get injured, because even old Porzingis is a still viable player because of his skill set. And I think with Cat's skill set, because Cat's skill set doesn't depend on athleticism. So even if he did get hurt and he just had to come back, shoot jump shots, do a couple post shots and make passes, he could still do that. Because I feel like he's not as good as a passer as Jokic or a dribbler, but with Cat's skill set, he could literally do a style of play like Jokic, an unathletic style of play, and still be a viable option. But with the value of his contract, yes, I'm going to have to 100% agree they probably tried to get on top of it before they had the chance to. And obviously Minnesota is a very cheap place to be, if you understand. So, you know, they not going to pay no money as long as – even if it's for – even if they right there on a championship door, which I think this team was, especially in the West. If you knock out the Nuggets, at the end of the day, you're competing. And the Mavericks just got real hot and Ant just wasn't ready. He still was young, still figuring it out. He just went up to the next level of a guy at his position, you know. So it's tough, but we have to see. Let us know who you guys think won this trade, Knicks or Cat, and then how better or how worse did each team get. Let us know. Comment down below. Also, Sean, today is our first peek of NBA Media Day. Obviously, we're going to get our NBA previews and stuff later on, but ain't nothing wrong with it, a little bit early excitement. Have any media days have you watched yet so far? And has anything you heard or seen shocked you, surprised you, made you happy, made you turn your head sideways? For what have you seen so far in media day?
Well, as I would tell you, the first thing I saw was watching, you know, a bit of Philly's media day. Joel Embiid looked thinner. He's actually dropped 25 or 30 pounds, which I think, you know, we all know for a fact that, you know, if there's two guys who need to, you know, watch their weight, is Joel Embiid and Zion Williamson. Mm-hmm. But I think this will help Joel Embiid, again, from a lower body perspective, stay healthier longer. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, definitely seeing Joel Embiid's weight loss. And I think, again, Joel Embiid is coming into this season, obviously, with the addition of Paul George and the continued emergence of Tyrese Maxey, who's an all-star, as we know. I think Philadelphia is dead serious about really going for this thing. Yes. Over the next couple of years. So, you know, I know you mentioned you had the Knicks as your second best team in the East. I actually had Philly, and then the Knicks. And more because Philly just has more depth. Yeah. And again, you know, we know they have an MVP on their team, and you know, two guys who are generally all-star level players. So, you know, and Nick Nurse. So I like Philly. And again, it's all contingent on health, but you know, what seeing Joel Embiid come in, you know, with that weight loss and looking like he's in shape for the regular season, and to go for it was definitely probably the first thing that stood out to me.
The only reason why I didn't put Philly second, Sean, is the clear elephant in the room of Joel Embiid's health, and that's literally the only reason why. And because it got to a point where, yes, I did see a post. I didn't watch Philadelphia 76ers media, but I did see a post saying that Joel Embiid did lose a lot of weight, which is cool. But until I actually see him healthy in the playoffs, past the second round or going into the second round, I don't believe it. So I'm going to go with health, because health is always the most important factor. If it was the playoffs started day one, then, you know, everybody bracket would be different. You know, maybe the Lakers would probably rank higher than the play-in team for me if it was a 10-game season. But it's not; it don't work out like that. It's 82. And Joel Embiid has not shown his ability to be healthy. Now, if he proves it, good luck to the man. I'll be happy for him. But, no, I can't do that. For me, in my media day, obviously, you know, I had to look at my Chicago Bulls. I'm not going to lie. I seen a little bit of the Zach LaVine one talk about how much he's happy to be here. He's probably more happy to be here because of that contract, and then he don't have to fight over the ball with DeMar DeRozan no more, so now he can get as many and jack up as many shots that he usually want to take. Speaking of Lonzo Ball, too, I seen the video of Lonzo Ball talking. I wanted to click on it so much time because I seen the title. So, like, yeah, my journey in Chicago, trying to – I was like, I don't even want to hear it, but I'm going to go back to it at some point. I've seen it like four times, and I couldn't click on it because I'm just like, I feel like I just got highway robbed with Lonzo. But it's not his fault because injuries is the thing. I definitely seen a little bit of the Knicks talking about the cat trade. I think, you know, like I said, the Knicks is second best team with Tibbs. Hopefully he don't run those guys' knees to the ground. But knowing how Tibbs play and Tibbs could compete every regular season game like a playoff game, I think the Knicks are going to be a problem. And then, obviously, you know, you can't avoid it. You always going to see the Lakers media day. You got Bronny talking about that always. So, you know, I seen a little bit of that, but the majority of stuff I've seen is about Bron and Bronny talking about how they practice is. Is he going to call him dad or not? I'm like, bro, y'all gassing it, man. He already asked his question, but, you know, they still got to ask. You know, people try to clip farm. That's what they call it when you farming for clips. So that's the only thing I've seen, too. So I'm just like, whatever. But I am excited that it's getting close to having NBA basketball back. Now, we got to switch over to the gridiron. Got to go to the football side. But let's do a quick word from sponsor, and then we get right back to the show.
Want to be a part of Real Takes over fake debates with sponsorship, promos, or even a shout-out? Go to business@realtakesoverfakedebates.com or business@sbtalksports.com.
So, Sean, every day in the sports world, we got to chase drama. We got to chase drama. We got to chase clicks. And Brady obviously just added more fuel to the fire. Obviously, you know, Brady has now switched over from on the field into the broadcast booth. And this does not have been a smooth start for Tom Brady. We obviously say Tony Romo has started off with a smoother start from him. He had a comment ripping Baker Mayfield. I'm going to get into the comment with 1 second. And I want to bring this up from the fact because, Sean, you will understand this from my point where I'm coming from, because both media trained, both with the media school, had everything that. Pretty much we went through the process of understanding how hard it is getting in this booth. And I know in the social media world where podcast has become a thing and everybody wants to get a mic, you load up, say everything. And it's a difference. It is a difference from talking sports where you just turn your mic on, you go live, you can have everybody on your platform and you just talking like you're just in a barbershop talk, which is a space for that. You also have stuff we doing where we trying to do an organized show, do it the right way. It's a space for that. When it comes to the broadcast booth, where people do live play-by-plays like watch-alongs, it's a difference from watch-alongs and actually being in the broadcast booth. And everybody thinks just because you are a player and you play the sport, you can easily come, which it should, it logically it should make sense where you could just easily come talk about a sport that you play. But it's actually harder than a lot of people think. And Tom Brady is kind of going through that himself. And Tom Brady, which I have him as the GOAT quarterback, GOAT whatever, Mr. Seven Rings, which obviously if you hear Tom Brady broadcast again, you probably gonna hear Mr. Seven Rings or seven-time Super Bowl champion more than seven times when you're watching the game. But Tom Brady's having a hard time in there. Boom, Sean, am I wrong for saying this or crazy?
No, you're not wrong for saying it. you know, again, it's a thing where, again, like, you know, if you've been through training, you've been through coaching, you've been through all that stuff, you understand, you literally have in between play-by-play, you literally have maybe 15, 20 seconds to get a point out, make it quick, make it relevant, and then, for lack of a better term, shut up. Because you got to get back to the, because the play-by-play needs to get back to it. You know, there are some who figure that out really quickly. There are some it takes more time. There are some who you said have a natural inkling for it. You know, I think about, you know, kind of the John Maddens, that a lot of the ones who are really true to their personality and really, you know, stick with their personality, but also, again, understand there's an entertainment value to it. They're the ones who tend to last, you know, the longest. And again, I say that not just from an analyst, but also from a play-by-play person. There's some really good play-by-play people out there who, again, understand it's an entertainment value, and it should feel like that person who's calling play-by-play is literally sitting right next to you and y'all are talking about the game, you know. So, you know, I think Brady still has a ways to go. I hope he knows that. They gave him $375 million, which, you know, okay. And, you know, but I haven't heard $375 million worth of commentary these first few weeks. So
He going to get it, hopefully. You know how his work ethic is, maybe he going to get it. Because he had a strong comment about Baker Mayfield, because I believe this comment stems from how Baker Mayfield pretty much was saying, like, he found his way in with the Buccaneers, and it's like more fun. It's not like stressful. Pretty much stuff. Pretty much found the comfortability because, you know, he's with the Browns, went bad, and he had to go to different places, then went bad, and he actually found a home with the Buccaneers. So Brady had the comment where he talking about, like, where he was talking about the stressful stuff, how Baker Mayfield said it was like less stress. So Brady said, and I quote in the booth at this. He said, I thought stressful was not having Super Bowl rings, Brady said in the booth via ESPN. So there was a mindset of a champion that I took to work every day. This wasn't daycare. If I was going to have fun, I go to Disneyland with my kids. There's a way to approach to get this game, and it's with the right mindset to try to push each other outside of our comfort zone. And great teammates do that. You come, I have someone like Rob Gronkowski, I have someone like Mike Evans. They're a high expectation for us. We got to make sure we go out there and deliver. Pause. I want to pause it right there. Before I get to Baker Mayfield did respond, by the way. Tom Brady has to understand this. You came into the league in a great coaching situation who has established a great program and a great system for you to have that mindset. Because I can 100% tell you this, half of that stuff is probably from Bill Belichick and Bill Belichick system and Bill Belichick mindset of how the program is going to be run, and this the mindset that you're supposed to have. Now, I'm not saying Tom Brady wasn't the greatest person, but I could have sworn when Tom Brady got drafted, it wasn't in the first round. It wasn't in the second round. So for whom all this greatness and a mindset you got to have, no, it's more to it than that. Because that's the case, Tom Brady, why didn't you go in the first? Well, with all that greatness at Michigan. Oh, you didn't have the talent? No. The expectations still say the same. Because just because Baker said now it's more fun, now he's in a system where most believe in him, that don't take away from what that's going on, Tom Brady. By the time you got to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you was already Mr. Established Tom Brady, multiple, a fistful of rings, already known as a leader, well-known. You had your stripes. So when you walked in the room, everybody had to listen to you. Baker Mayfield had to earn that because Baker Mayfield was coming from being out of the league situation. And he went to the Buccaneers as just like, hey, it's just a guy we're going to have for now. And then we're going to weed him out. And he's just going to play this role until we get another young quarterback. He ended up establishing himself and got him a job and went to a team that believes in him. So it's a difference. Before we get into the Baker quote, though, Sean, what was your initial reaction? That's my initial reaction. I'm like, Brady not appreciating where he came from. A lot of people don't come in a good system like that they wish they did. Ask Justin Fields, who's now in the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's noticing that, oh, this is a totally different dynamic when you in a program that actually know what they're doing, know what they're talking about. So what was your reaction to Brady's first initial comment before we get into Baker's?
So I just want to say, if Tom Brady had actually taken his kids to Disneyland, maybe he would still have his wife. Tom Brady talked about taking his kids to Disneyland when literally you retire and 40 days later you came back and was like, nah, I'm going to play again. It was basically you saying, F them kids.
Yeah, so he said, nah, this ain't fun.
Yeah, so you talking about your kids in Disneyland probably ain't the best analogy to use. So you want to probably shut up there.
I mean, it's either that or a yoga instructor quote. So which one would probably hurt worse? I think you have to do the kids at Disneyland. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Idiot. Anyway, you know, it, again, I think you made all the points, SB. I think the general point is that some people don't come into a great situation, into an organization that understands, number one, when he came into the league, he was not expected to be the guy, right?
Was not.
He put in the work in an organization that, again, had built a foundation and a culture under Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft and ascended because Mo Lewis took out Drew Bledsoe, right? So let's not forget that piece of it as well. So you needed a little bit of, you know, some things out of your control on your side in order to ascend to that level. I think when you talk about personality, every quarterback has a different personality. But I think the majority of quarterbacks, particularly quarterbacks who want to be great, come in with that idea and come in with that mindset of they want to be great, but they want to help their team be great, right? Mm-hmm. It ain't just Tom Brady. Just because you got the result doesn't mean you were always right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Doesn't mean you always handled it. Right. And again, you know, I don't want to go too deep there because, again, there's another faction, another issue there that I don't want to necessarily dive into right now. Mm-hmm. But I just will say that, again, I think it was Baker talking about, again, the difference in his personality. And they didn't ask him to come in and be Tom Brady. They wanted him to be himself. And, again, himself has matured, has grown up. Again, you mentioned SB had to jump around a few different places before he found a home in Tampa, and you know, and shout out to him. And but also, he didn't just find a home, he got an opportunity, because a lot of guys can find a home, but you gotta get an opportunity. We're gonna watch a guy tonight in Geno Smith, who bounced around, had to wait his turn, and again has found a home in Seattle, presumably, you know, for as long as he's playing well and as long as, again, the organization says you're our guy. So that's that's part of it. But all these quarterbacks want to win. All these quarterbacks generally want to be great.
Yep.
It's and they have the mentality, but they also have to be true to their personality, right? Mm-hmm. And again, hearing things from how that locker room was when he was here, and I'm saying here because I'm in Tampa, is very different than how the locker room is with Baker, because their personalities are different, right?
Yep.
Baker's not a celebrity. Tom Brady is a celebrity, right? He's a well-known celebrity, you know, so that's the part of the difference. And also, like you said, he built this resume in New England. Yep. Baker's resume is not the same coming to Tampa as Tom Brady's was coming from New England. So they shouldn't be expected to be the same. But, you know, I just think it's in poor taste by Tom Brady to comment on it that way. And again, you know, you're talking about, you know, taking your kids to Disneyland. Not a good analogy. Do better.
Now I have to say 100% knew better. But Baker did respond. And Baker responds after he won the game, too. It said, follow the win, Baker Mayfield wanted to clear up what he said about his predecessor and that he made no disrespect to the future Hall of Famer. I think a lot of it got taken out of context, Mayfield said. None of it was personal by any means. It was just what he demanded of the guys and their aura of Tom Brady. That's what he did to bring a championship here. It's nothing personal. But, yeah, we're talking before the game. He's obviously happy for me, and he knows the guys. He knows how much I enjoy throwing Mike Evans and Chris Godwin because he got to do the same. It's fun to be able to talk about the same experience with a guy like that. So I like Baker respond to it because obviously you just want to be humble and cool. But it's Tom. Also, Tom has to understand, like you said, him and Baker are two different people. But also, Tom, this is not the same team that you had. And even Tampa Bay's understood that because Tampa Bay moved into a this is a win now mode because we got Tom Brady, who's the GOAT quarterback, and they ask right now, and he's trying to win. And now we got a guy of Tom Brady's caliber. We got the pieces to win. We got everything. Because mind you, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was solid before Tom Brady came there. The only problem was the consistent play for Jameis Winston, and they didn't believe in Jameis Winston. The talent was there. Nobody, people want to hate to admit it. Jameis Winston is very talented. If you want to question his leadership and his questionability of not turning over the ball, there's a lot of things that go into fact. That's a deeper story than rap. We can go. That's a different story for a different day. But let's just say that the main dynamic was, hey, only problem is quarterback, leadership, and take care of the ball. So we got Tom Brady, who comes with the aura, comes with the championship pedigree, and comes with to, hey, I'm not coming here unless you guys trying to win a championship. Y'all going to do everything to do to win a championship. Boom. So now that the market goes up, ticket sales goes up, now the opportunity to win a championship, which you guys did, goes up. Now you go, this is post-championship era. Because you know what happened in the post-championship era when you win championships? A lot of people get paid. A lot of people leave the team. A lot of people retire. So you lose a lot of pieces in which you could, if you check the Buccaneers championship team compared to the team, now it's a totally different team. And then they in a post-championship era where they're trying to still compete. And let's see how far we can go with Baker because they didn't know Baker could be the guy, not that could lead them. And once Baker, pretty much he like two more steps away from like, okay, this is our guy. I think we can actually win with him. And I guarantee you when the money get back right, they're going to try to push with Baker too. And so that's what Tom Brady has to understand. And then also, Tom, you got to have fun at some point in time with the game of football. You didn't take everything being all that 100% serious Super Bowl to probably after, let's be honest, like after you, because remember Tom Brady would have won like three, then went on like a drought. I think Tom Brady with that all seriousness came into his win or nothing was when after he went through that drought of a streak. It was at least like, what, like 8 years that he didn't win after 10 years. He went 10 years without winning. Then he got a couple more. Then it's like, okay, I'm at the tail end of my career. Let's see how many Super Bowl wins I can get. Baker Mayfield ain't at that point in his career. At this point in his career, is trying to establish a consistent job. Once you can establish yourself in a consistent job base where I can consistently know that, hey, no matter what, I'm the guy here, then I worry about winning the Super Bowl. I got to make sure I'm still going to be here tomorrow. And that's all it is with Baker.
And I will say just one thing, just to clarify one thing you said, SB, it was not the exact same team when Tom Brady took over from Jameis Winston, right? There was no Leonard Fournette when Jameis Winston was in Tampa. There was no Rob Gronkowski when Jameis Winston was in Tampa. There was no Antonio Brown when Jameis Winston was in Tampa. There was no Tristan Wirfs when Jameis Winston was in Tampa. So there were a lot of moves. There were a lot of things done and made to, as you said, to go all in to try to win with Tom Brady. But also, there were things they needed to happen to help them win. They needed to play against a Washington team on the road who was basically starting Taylor Heineke in his first game that he's ever played in, right, to win. They needed to play against a New Orleans team with Drew Brees, whose arm was a noodle at that point and was gone to win. They needed to go to Green Bay, and Tom Brady, despite throwing three interceptions in the game, they were able to pull it out late in the game. So, you know, my point is that there were things that they needed to happen to help them. It ain't just because, oh, I showed up in town and my greatness is why we got over the hump. No, it ain't never like that. And if I ever met this idiot, I would tell him, no, it ain't all about you.
On that note, I have nothing else to say after that one shot. But speaking of, because I wanted to go to our previews, but I figured like we could do the previews at the end. I'm going to push the previews a little back. Because speaking of somebody doing something dumb, now, imagine, I don't like the Packers anyway. Only thing I like about the Packers is that Bird is on the team. Shout out Jaden Reed. That's it. But Jordan Love has just added to my not favorite quarterback list, Sean, because this guy decided to show up in the game. Imagine, I'm not a cruel or evil person, because at the end of the day, only person can judge people is the Most High. I'm not. But to show up in the game with a Brett Favre jersey on is devious work at this time. It's just time. I feel like it's a too sensitive of a time right now to put on a Brett Favre jersey, even though you're a Pack. Because, yes, I heard he has personal issues going on with his health. Prayers to that person as me saying it as a human being. But also, he did some other devious things that I feel like that was out of line as a human being saying. So I feel like to even, it's a gray in the sand. I feel like, especially you as a quarterback, you don't want to be in certain lanes because now you're putting yourself in the tear lane. So now if you play bad, imagine he looked at like Brett Favre when he played, threw three interceptions, threw the ball 54 times, was out there gunslinging the ball. It was terrible because now I'm looking like, hey, man, start Malik Willis at this point. Make it easier. But what was your reaction, Evie, you want to talk about the game or Jordan Love wearing a Brett Favre jersey? I think that was devious work.
Well, I'll speak about both, and I'll just say, you know, listen, you know, karma's a dog, and sometimes, you know, you gotta be careful about what you put on and what you put in your spirit. You know, I understand the Packer thing, and you know, Brett Favre is a Packer, but Brett Favre is a piece of trash, and I don't say that lightly. He's a piece of trash. And now he's just a piece of trash that's going to shake a little bit. So, okay. But he did have a Brett Favre-ian game. Again, like you mentioned, the 54 pass attempts. They were down early. They were down 28-0. They were getting cooked. So, again, obviously when you're down that much, you do throw the football a lot. They were able to get back in the game, to their credit, late. And again, a lot of that was just, again, them throwing the ball as much as they were. Jaden Reed had an incredible game as well, as you mentioned. But, you know, again, you got to be careful what you represent. And again, I understand, you know, the Packers quarterback lore with Favre and Rodgers and now on to Jordan Love. But that was one, you probably just want to sit that one out.
Yes. I think he should have avoided that one. Yeah, so I will not be rooting for you unless Bird got the ball. That's it. That's the only way I'm doing for it. But on another deal, let's talk the other side of the football of this game. The Minnesota Vikings, Sean, right now. And I want to pull our predictions up again because I know I put the Vikings – finish. Let me get this out the way real quick. People listening on the audio realm, well, we posted predictions, but I put the Vikings as fourth in this division.
Yes, I did.
And Sean, you said you did too as well.
Yes.
Yes, you did. We can all agree and say the Vikings are a real deal. And I'm just as shocked as anybody else to see the Vikings doing this good because obviously they lost Kirk Cousins. We didn't necessarily know how the defense is going to play because the defense is very much very real. Shout out Blair Forrest. And if he played the defense and the Vikings looking this good, he should get a head coaching job soon. But Sean, if I was to tell you coming into this season, the Minnesota Vikings will start the season 4-0. Will have one of the best defenses in the league, if not the best defense in the league. And Sam Darnold is playing like one of the best quarterbacks in the league. would you think they not try to cancel our podcast?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, you know what the Vikings are, SB? Mm-hmm. The Vikings are that person. If you're a dude, female, mm-hmm. you're a female, a dude that you meet and that you might see and from a distance and be like, yeah, they're all right. You know, yeah, they're all right. And then you get up close to them and you actually have a conversation with them and have a few conversations with them. And be like, you know what? They're actually really cool people, like really, mm-hmm. really good people. That's the Vikings. Yeah. Yeah. Just looking at them. You'd be like, you know, coming into the season, we were kind of like, oh, you know, maybe. No real expectations and blah, blah, blah. You know, now it's like, oh, now that you've had an up-close look over the first 4 weeks and it's like, oh, you know what? They actually really a really good team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, and I think a lot of it was, again, they were a team for a lot of us that do this. They came in with, you know, no real expectation. Everybody was talking about, obviously, Green Bay and Detroit in the division, and obviously the emergence of the Bears in the mm-hmm. division. So nobody was really talking about them, and it's like, oh, you know, they actually are a really good mm-hmm. team. You know, now, while I don't want to take away from what they've done these first 4 weeks, because, again, at the end of the day, it's about winning, I want to see, obviously, can they sustain this over a 17-game season? Because, again, that's going to be interesting. But, I mean, right now, I would say without question, they are the surprise of the season. Because, again, I don't think anybody had them, you know, at 4-0, which, again, is, you know, a tremendous start for that team. And, again, Sam Darnold, everybody's going to look at Sam Darnold. But, you know, they made some really nice roster moves in the offseason.
Quietly, you
know,
too.
Quietly, you know, getting Aaron Jones from Green Bay, you know, was a big move. And also, again, the continued emergence of that defense under Brian Flores as well. So, you know, shout out to Minnesota for making this a very interesting season and definitely very interesting NFC so far to start out the year.
Yeah, and then if you had this point out one thing that makes them a big deal. And I see JJ McCarthy made a post about them saying like it was like a meme saying that when they was up like 28 or 21-0, whatever the score was, like somebody disconnected from the game because they getting blow out, which is hilarious. Obviously you did draft JJ, but if Minnesota keep playing this good, what do you do? Do you just keep JJ on the bench? Cause what you gonna do next season? I don't think JJ coming back this season.
Well, no, I think he's out for the year, so no.
So what do you do next year, though?
I think as an organization, you have to make, you know, a decision. And again, you know, the comparison I will make is your favorite team, SB, you know, Chargers. The year they got Phillip Rivers, obviously, you know, in the trade with the Giants during the draft, they had Drew Brees. Drew Brees came back the next season, played really well. And they didn't play Phillip Rivers for a while. So maybe you give JJ McCarthy the Phillip Rivers, the Jordan Love, you know, treatment where he doesn't play, you know, for a couple years because you are playing well with this quarterback. Mm-hmm. But again, I think ultimately they're going to have to, you know, not now, because again, you know, it's not a rush.
You know,
the big thing is you ride the so-called hot hand, and it doesn't matter, you know, for a lot of these teams, it doesn't matter where you drafted somebody. Is this the right person to, you know, be in this position? Are they in the right seat on the bus for us? And right now, Sam Darnold's in the right seat on the Minnesota Vikings bus. And whenever JJ McCarthy comes back, you know, they'll make a decision. But I would say for now, it's Sam Darnold until otherwise.
We're looking at like this rookie, like you never want to rush a rookie, but sometimes you don't have the guy in front of you or you the opportunity where you could actually sit back and develop by watching. Because this other guy in Jaden Daniels has to go out there. Obviously, he was a high pick in his last year draft, number two pick to be exact. So he had to go to a franchise and be the guy. I'm getting flashbacks of CJ Stroud last year. And I'm getting flashbacks of seeing a guy in that burgundy and yellow looking like an elite guy, like the RG3 time. I don't want the Commanders to mess this up. But, Sean, for this young guy to have an 82 completion rate, he almost had 1,000 yards within three games, three TDs, one interception with a 107 quarterback rating. Man, I know the touchdown numbers don't pop out to you, but it's just like when I'm watching, man, he got a couple rushing touchdowns too. But to have this high completion percentage, the way he throws the ball, the way he doesn't seem so rushed, the way he can run in the end zone, know when to make the smart plays. I really don't see him take that many big hits. Obviously, we just seen Anthony Richardson get hurt again. He has to do better. That's a different story for a different day. But I think Jaden Daniels is the guy for the Commanders. I think they got their guy, man. This kid is the real deal. And, Sean, I was already praising these quarterbacks in the draft, like the Calebs, the Jaden Daniels. I think Atlanta got a backup in Michael Penix, who I still stand on that. I think he is the best thrower of the pure thrower of the football out of this class. But Jaden Daniels is the guy for the Commanders. They got their guy. I'm full force ahead. Please, Commanders, do not ruin this kid. He's the guy. He's the guy.
You know, SB, I agree with you. I hope they don't ruin him. I hope they don't mess him up. Obviously, I think two things that need to be pointed out. Number one, their organization is doing something that we hadn't said about that organization probably since Joe Gibbs, and that is they are providing organizational stability and trying to provide organizational consistency for their quarterback they drafted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when you bring in Dan Quinn, who's, again, in his first year there as the head coach, he gets Cliff Kingsbury, who did interview with Chicago for their offensive coordinator position.
Wish they should have gave him the job if you're going to get killed. But that's a different story for a different day.
Well, so I think a couple things that they to consider. Why Washington was more of an attractive place for him is because Washington doesn't have a lame duck head coach. Matt Eberflus, remember we talked about last year with Washington getting, or not with Chicago getting the number one pick. I thought it was almost important for them to consider moving on from Matt Eberflus, not because Matt Eberflus is a terrible coach, but is he the long-term answer in Chicago? And is he going to be there for the entirety of Caleb Williams' rookie contract? And also, you know, I know a few Bears fans who absolutely hate Shane Waldron. But again, it was, if you're Cliff Kingsbury, why would I go somewhere where there's a potential lame duck head coach versus somewhere where there's a brand new head coach? You know he's going to get time. You know the organization is trying to stabilize itself. And obviously, we got the number two pick, so we got a very young talent at quarterback. So I think that was why Washington was far more attractive and appealing. But it's the difference in the organizational structure and stability long term. And I think that helps. And also, I think what Washington is doing, and if you watch them play, they're not asking Jaden Daniels to drop back and throw the ball 40 times a game. He's only averaging about 26 pass attempts a game so far. Perfect. Right. So they're not asking him to drop back and throw all the time, but also they're asking him to use his legs, which he does, and we know he does, and he does very well. Mm-hmm. But Cliff Kingsbury, I think, has designed a system around his skill set to make it, again, plausible for him to be successful, and he's just going out and executing, and the offense is executing really well right now. And particularly yesterday, their defense probably played their best game of the season so far. So, you know, what he's doing is great. But again, it's sustainability, and the sustainability of let's do this consistently for him and for the rest of our team. Mm-hmm. And again, I think they're making that division. They're leading that division right now. Nobody, again, I think coming into the season would have them leading the division. But they are. And again, it's because, again, I just look at all of the factors that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. They're stable. And that is helping this. And also, I would mention Jayden Daniels had over 50 starts in college, right? Mm-hmm. So when I watch him, he was like a guy who's he's not overly thinking. He understands, generally speaking, what his job is. And again, it's early, but he's a guy that you can tell he's been through some tests and some battles, albeit in college. Yep. Now he's just bringing it to the NFL. And again, let's see if they continue to build upon it. But what he's doing so far, I think, can't be understated.
100% agree. Cottage had a question in the chat. He said, can the Commanders win the NFC East, SB and Sean? At this moment, I'm a personally say no, because I still think their main goal and how they plan and how they move it is developing Jayden Daniels. I don't think they care about win-loss. I think a lot of teams with rookie quarterbacks should all move in the direction of what the Commanders are doing. But no, I think even though the Eagles have been on off, I still got the Eagles winning this division. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I still have the Eagles winning the division. Certainly, they have some things they got to get figured out. Namely, they got to get guys healthy first. But I would still have the Eagles winning the division. I just think it's just a very long season. But that said, I think the Commanders are going to be right there, you know, in the end, competing for a wild card, potentially in the NFC, given, you know, some of the struggles of some of the other teams in the conference. But I don't think they win the division. I still have the Eagles winning the division.
Sean, as always, injuries suck, but we got to talk about it. Your injury bug of the week is?
It's Rashee Rice. You know, they fear he's torn his ACL. Obviously, you know, you saw the game yesterday, SB. Yes. Did not look good. It was, you know, kind of friendly fire yesterday on a fumble or interception that was fumbled. And, you know, so they lose Rashee Rice. Obviously, they don't have Marquise Brown. He's out
for the year as well.
Or Isaiah Pacheco, who will be back probably at some point during the season. You know, it just puts a little more on the plate of Patrick Mahomes. But this is Patrick Mahomes, and this is Andy Reid, you know, and they will figure it out. They still got some, you know, receivers in the room. Sky Moore is there. Obviously, you know, you still have Xavier Worthy. Mecole Hardman is there.
Forget all that, Sean. Address the elephant in the room. Travis Kelce got a ball, bro. You know, excuse. Hey, man, that man, he got that Jim Carrey. Me, myself, I read mustache and just lost his ability or lost the juice.
No, I'll tell you what he lost. He went from cheeks to chiclets. That's the problem.
We got to get this brother. No offense to the Swifties. We don't want no Swiftie beef. But, bro, we got to put some soul or something back in Travis Kelce, because I don't know who this is, man.
No, I'm going to tell you what it is. You know, there's the expression, once you go black, you never go back.
Uh-huh.
He went black. Why did he go back?
I don't know, man. All right.
So yeah,
it's like you ever seen a magic? You ever seen the Space Jam with the water bottle and Michael Jordan secret stuff? Whatever it is, when they took the powers, somebody took his powers or something. It's something going wrong, man. The powers are gone.
Cheeks to chicklets. I'm telling you, cheeks to chicklets. Yeah.
It's crazy. Somebody else seeing something like that. but I ain't gonna talk about that bad Twitter. I can't even say shout him out, but everybody know who CTESPN is. Just go look on his Twitter. You see what he said about Travis Kelce. Hilarious, by the way. But yeah, man, Travis Kelce got a ball. We had one of his best games this year. Wasn't a good game, but he had one of his best games, because Travis Kelce always ball against us. But he still didn't look. I was like, when I seen that, I was like, bro, he ain't balling against us. I don't know what's going on. So I have to agree with Sean. He with cheeks to chicklets is crazy. But he got hey Trav, man. Look, man, I ain't saying cheating is wrong. I'm gonna say cheating is wrong. But you got to talk to the Swifties and say, look, man, I gotta find some way to get my powers back. So let me just have this. It's just gonna be under the table. Never happened. And just get my boy, let him go to the barber shop, get a taper, had to bring the fade back, get the beard. He got to just do something, because this ain't Travis Kelce. I don't know who this is at all. I don't know who this guy is. But my injury bug of the week, you kind of stole my answer, because I was definitely going to say, because it shows how hard it is to three-peat, because this is part of three-peating. I was going to go Rice. But I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to go Anthony Richardson with his hip injury because I feel like this is just a sign to come of what the problems is with Anthony Richardson. This kid got to learn how to find a way to protect himself. Big play guy, and how his skill set is set that he need as many reps as possible because so far Anthony Richardson is a big, strong, fast quarterback who only can make big plays. The more reps you get, I think he can learn how to make the simple play. So the biggest injury bug for me got to go be Anthony Richardson just because of that factor. All right, Sean, before we get into our recap of our picks to see who won this week, we got to go to this Dolphins and Titans preview in the line of sales because the game's going to get ready to start. If not, it's already starting now. So let's go ahead and get into it, make it real quick. Dolphins and Titans, what you got for this preview?
Dolphins and Titans. Dolphins obviously starting Snoop Huntley tonight, former Raven quarterback starting for the first time tonight. Be interesting to see, you know, how they're able to game plan against someone who, you know, offers kind of a run pass option, you know, at the quarterback position. Can they find unique ways to get Tyreek Hill the ball? Mm-hmm. Again, you know, it doesn't always have to be on Tyreek Hill running, you know, a bunch of, you know, deep routes and post routes. You know, find some unique ways to get Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle involved. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, make sure you run the football. Try to control time of possession if you're the Dolphins. Yep. For the Titans, Titans haven't won a game yet. And again, you know, Will Levis, just need Will Levis to play within himself. Don't do anything stupid. You know, play complimentary football. Allow your defense, you know, not to be on the field too much. And, you know, I believe the Titans should win this game. I did pick the Titans to win this game, so I'm still going with the Titans to win this game.
I think I picked the Dolphins. I picked the Titans with you.
You picked the Titans.
Yeah, I think because of the quarterback play is always going to be a concern. And also another big injury bug is always going to be Tua Tagovailoa because I had high hopes for the Dolphins, but without him. Yeah, for me, I think this is going to come down to the Titans defense winning and Will Levis not making a bonehead play. And I think they should be perfectly fine because you're just bringing a new guy in. They're going to pretty much run like the basic packages because he's not going to know the offense in that much in depth. So if you can't beat a quarterback who's going to be running the basic packages of the offense, it's going to tell you a lot about the Titans. Next game, and I think this game is going to be a big, beautiful game, and I'm definitely going to be all in and all locked in watching this game. This is a game I'm probably going to pay attention to it more when it come on than the game before that Lions versus Seattle. I believe I picked the Lions in this game too, didn't I? Did I pick the Lions?
You picked the Lions. I picked Seattle.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a good game. It's obviously 50-50 game to go either way, especially it being in it's Seattle, by the way, right?
It's in Detroit.
Obviously, Detroit. Oh, even better for Detroit because it's going to be at home. But like I said, this game can go 50-50. Detroit is good. Seahawks is good. I'm expecting a good grinded out football type game. Yeah, that's it for me for the preview for this. I'm just excited to watch.
Yeah, I will say, you know, Geno Smith as a starter has won six straight against Detroit. Interestingly enough, I did pick Seattle to win the game just because, again, Detroit has some injury concerns, particularly Frank Ragnow, their center is out. And, you know, if you haven't watched Brian Murphy, the second there, Seattle's defensive tackle, he is a very, very nice young player, pass rusher. So I think Seattle will find a way to pull it out tonight, but should be a good game. I think it's the better game of the two games tonight. No disrespect to the Dolphins or the Titans, but y'all suck.
You be honest. So you be honest about it. So I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
At all. But Shy, you know, we got to do the recap of the picks of the week. So we'll see who got the dub. Let's do it.
Yeah. First game, Denver at the Jets. We both took the Jets. Denver won the game. Jets offense got to be better.
Terrible.
I think the defense gave you everything they were supposed to. And I also don't want to hear about quarterback win-loss record because Bo Nix made like two decent throws the whole game. It was very much a defensive battle. So, Sean, you know,
Bo Nix is all to my fault, is my fantasy quarterback. I literally looked and see, because I didn't watch that game. I'm not watching that game. I was like, yeah, your quarterback, Bo Nix, has negative passing yards at halftime. What? What's going on? I was like, yeah, that's ugly, man.
Yeah.
Sorry to mention, I'm going to pick you up, brother.
Yeah. So But yes, so we both did not win that game. Obviously, we both picked the Jets. New Orleans at Atlanta. You took Atlanta. I took New Orleans, of course. Atlanta did win. Did pull it out. Minnesota at Green Bay. You took Minnesota. I took Green Bay. So you get that one as well. Philadelphia at Tampa Bay. You took Tampa. Tampa did pull it out. So you do win that one as well. Cincinnati at Carolina. I took Cincy. You took Carolina. So I get that one. Jacksonville at Houston. We both took Houston. Houston did pull it out. Great last drive by Houston's offense, by the way. Pittsburgh at Indianapolis. We both took the Steelers. The Colts did pull it out. So neither one of us gets that one. LA Rams at Chicago. We both took the Bears. Bears pulled that one out. Washington at Arizona. We both took Arizona. Arizona got crushed, as we admit, as we, you know, earlier. So, destroyed. New England at San Francisco. We both took 49ers. 49ers did win. Cleveland at Las Vegas. We both took the Browns. Vegas pulled it out. Getting really concerned about the Browns as well, particularly offensively, but that's another conversation. Kansas City at the Chargers. You took the Chargers, of course. I took Kansas City. Kansas City did win. Buffalo at Baltimore. We both took Baltimore. Baltimore smacked them. Great job by Baltimore integrating Derrick Henry and using
more Derrick Henry to ball.
And they came out into my formation with Patrick Ricard at fullback and just literally just wore that Buffalo defense out up front. So we got two games tonight. If Seattle wins, we will finish this week tied.
Okay.
So if Seattle wins, we'll finish this week tied. So it's not right now you are up. But I'm if up, Seattle right wins, we finish this week tied.
And we both pick who for the other game?
We both pick Tennessee tonight.
You want to change your pick to Miami?
God no.
Okay, I guess we're gonna take the chance of the tie. So Detroit, you gotta come through for your boy tonight. I was trying to get Sean to maybe who wanna end on the tie, Sean? Go ahead and take Miami, man.
You can take Miami. I'm not taking Miami.
I mean, Huntley is a good quarterback.
He is a good quarterback, but you know, I just trust the Titans as a team a little bit more right now.
Yeah, it's tough. Okay, well, that is our picks of the week. We're gonna find out Friday who won. And we're going to do our picks again during that time. But this has been another great episode of Real Takes Over Fake Debates with SP Talk Sports and Sean Webb. Episode 5, Season 2, Sean. Who you got for number 5?
For number 5, I'm going to go with one of my favorite number 5s, Albert Pujols.
Albert Pujols. Ooh, okay. I like that. I like that. I like the Albert Pujols pick. For me... I gotta go J. Kidd. One of the greatest point guards of all time. He's in my top 5 point guards of all time. So I'm gonna definitely have to go to J. Kidd. I'm trying to see other players that said they got KG.
I'm gonna go Donovan McNabb as well. Should be in the Hall of Fame. Donovan McNabb as well.
Shout out Donovan McNabb. Go KG. I want to see what other, NBA players as well. What NBA players to worth 5 that stick out? Mo Bamba. Nicholas Batum. Yeah, they talking about some trash players. Oh, I got another one for you. That's a good one.
You said who?
Baron Davis.
Baron Davis. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I need to go with Anthony Edwards.
Shout out Anthony Edwards. Yeah. My pick is definitely going to be the great J. Kidd. But thank you guys for watching another great episode of Real Takes Over Fake Debates. And you guys on the audio platform, it should be uploaded within the next hour on the audio platform. So thank you guys for watching. Make sure you guys like, make sure you guys share, and make sure you guys subscribe and join our Real Takes Over Fake Debates movie. We almost up to 3K. And we also moving up on the audio platform. So make sure you guys become a member on there and subscribe. And we are out of here. See you guys Friday. And also be looking out through the week for the videos. We drop videos. And we are out of here.